from my story to your story. Let's talk about grief. I will share my own grief journey, along with interviewing others about their path of sorrow and healing. I hope that you, the listener, will hear something that helps as you navigate your own grief, and that God will be glorified along the way. This content is meant as a discussion and not to give professional help. Let's get started.
Today, I would like to share with you my thoughts on the strangeness of grief, how weird grief can be, how odd it can be. You've heard people say, it hits me at the weirdest times, the most unusual times, and that's one of the areas that I think grief is strange, is just the moments that you are shocked by grief welling up inside of you, tears coming out. I know that we work to be ready for the milestone days that come when we are grieving, whether you have the birthday of someone you've lost, or whether you're facing the holidays like Thanksgiving and Christmas without your person, or, you know, maybe a date that you had a miscarriage, or that your divorce was final. We have these days that we work ourselves up for. In fact, so much so that I am sometimes processing and sad for a week or two out from these dates. And then finally the date comes and I'm almost relieved on that day that we've made it there and we're done and we're gonna put this behind us and keep going. So I'm not talking about those days that we know are coming and that are the mile markers along life's journey, but I am talking about the times when you were just surprised at the tears coming. I had mentioned in another episode about being at the eye doctor for the first time, having to check widow after my husband passed, and just falling apart in the doctor's office, thinking, I don't want to check that I'm a widow. I want to check that I'm married. And it took me by complete surprise. I wasn't ready for it. And I can remember the first, I don't know how many times, maybe a couple months worth of grocery store visits after my husband passed, that I would cry in the grocery store. He loved to cook, especially after it was just the two of us. And it just was effortless for him. I do not like to cook. I don't like to plan to cook. I don't like to grocery shop. He didn't mind any of it. You know, he'd go to the grocery store, grab some things, come home, throw dinner together, and it would be this beautiful plate that looks like it could have been on a cooking channel. And he also could come home in the evening, even after working all day, and just look in the fridge and gather some ingredients together, and boom, there's dinner. And it was delicious and beautiful. And, you know, it was one of the things I just thought, ooh, goals. I don't know if I'll ever get there. So for me, the things that there were certain ingredients he loved to cook with, or certain brand of something, or maybe a certain meal he made, or something he really enjoyed. And when I would go to the grocery store after he passed away, from the first time on, I would turn a corner and see something that would remind me of something he ate, or something he fixed, something that was his favorite. I can remember stopping by the grocery store for him and him sending me a picture and saying, now I want this, and I want this brand of this, or else it's not going to be the same, and it's got to be this one. And then I can remember, after he passed, coming around the corner of an aisle and seeing that product and tears just flowing. And that happened every time I went to the grocery store, on and on and on, after he passed away. And I can remember one time I couldn't get myself together to the point I had to just leave my cart and leave the store and go home. I can remember other times, you know, putting my hand down over my side of my face and looking at my phone or something till I could get the tears stopped, or I didn't really want to draw attention to it, or people wonder what was going on. And so I remember just thinking, it hits at the oddest times and in the oddest ways. Another thing that comes to mind, even though there's many, many things, would be like church versus our office. You know, my husband was a pastor, and so I sat in our church auditorium and heard him preach sermon after sermon, hundreds of them, over a period of time. And from the very first moment I went back to our church services, till now. I do not struggle when I go in that auditorium. I don't sit there and just cry because he's not there. I don't look up at the pulpit and say, you know, he should be there. And I can't explain it. And yet on the other hand, we shared an office at work in ministry there. And we had like this bookcase divider between us, and he was on the back side and I was on the front side. And as I went back to work, I can remember at first I was laser focused, you know, in shock and laser focused on just going through his desk and finding everything and getting everything to wherever it needed to be or whomever needed to see it. But as time went on, it grew increasingly more difficult for me to go in that office. I can remember going in and just getting things done, and then the next time it was a little harder, and then the next time I would even go over to the side of the office where his desk was and peek around there and think, maybe I will look around that corner and he's going to be sitting there in that chair. And I can recall the tears just streaming down my face when he wasn't there. And so for whatever reason, that area became extremely difficult and a huge source of tears every time I went through the door of our office, to the point that finally when it came time to truly clean that room all the way out and make it into something else, I had my son, who then became the pastor, and the staff there with him, a group of them, took it on themselves to say, you know, we can get this. And they would one day go in and just finish cleaning out the office where we had both been, because that was something that was just so difficult. And that's strange and weird that I can go into one place where he was and I was fine, and I can go into another place where he was and I despised it to the point I just had to stop going in there. So I would say, you know, one of the strange things about grief is that you don't know when you're going to get hit with the depth of it and the tears flowing. You don't know what's going to set you off, and it's often something unusual or a surprise. Another area that I think is strange about grief is the cloudiness of your mind after you have suffered through the death of a person that's close to you, or you've gone through some trauma. You cannot think straight. I had heard about people saying you drive aimlessly or you miss turns you've always known. And I didn't do it at first. It was a little ways into it before it happened to me. So I kind of thought, oh, you know, no, I'm not struggling with this like other people have. And then it started. And I remember exits that I had taken almost daily for years, driving right past them. So severe, two different times, that I was almost 20 minutes down the road before on an interstate before I realized, okay, you've missed your exit. And so 40 minutes after I'm supposed to be there, I finally arrived back at the destination I was headed to. I can remember getting in my car and just turning to go out of the parking lot at church or work, and sitting there for a second thinking, how do I get where I'm headed to, that store that I wanted to run by or that pharmacy or whatever, wherever I needed to go? And being terrified because I could not process and visualize what streets and how to get there. I can honestly say there were times I had to just turn on my GPS to go somewhere that I should have known how to get there. There were times that I would sit in a parking lot and in shock and fear think, how did I get here? I don't even remember driving here. And that cloudiness, I would laugh about it, make a joke out of it at times, and just say I had grief brain. I don't know what it's really called. I'm sure there's a technical term, but I remember working at a place of business not long after Don had passed, related to the hobby that I had. And I remember looking down and at a calculator, and for a brief moment feeling like I could not get a single thought to pass through my brain. And it terrified me. I couldn't think, oh, touch the button. You're going to process a sale. Just nothing. Nothing came to mind. Now, it might have only been for a split second. It seemed like forever. But it was just almost an out-of-body experience where you're looking down at yourself and realizing you cannot even complete the next step in something simple that you know how to do. So I think that how the brain operates in the first weeks, months, year or two after either losing a person or something traumatic happening in your life, you know, I know there are professionals who can medically explain and psychologically explain what happens to the body at that time. You know, in my own general everyday terminology, I think your brain is like it's short-circuiting. It went through something so shocking and so traumatic that to cope with it, it has these short circuits and it has these blockers that help you field certain things. And then that results in these little, for lack of a better word, where you can't process, you can't remember, you can't think. And I can also, in relationship to that, I can remember having difficulty making decisions. Something as simple as standing in your closet and looking at, you know, a row of clothing and it being not just, I wonder what I should wear today, but as in I would stand there and stare and almost be to the point of tears, like I cannot process which thing to reach up and grab. Such a simple thing. And I would, you know, somebody would say, well, do you want to eat? They would even narrow it down. Do you want to eat here or do you want to eat here? And I would say, with tears in my eyes, I just don't want to decide. You just tell me where we're going and help me get there. So, you know, when grief hits is strange, how cloudy your brain is, you feel like you're losing it, you might be getting early dementia or Alzheimer's, or how hard it is to make decisions. You think this is so strange that I can, you know, one moment I can go over here and in shock, I can make life-changing decisions about funerals and viewings and life insurance and, you know, notifying everyone I need to and putting bills in my name and all the things. But over here, I can't decide on the simplest thing like what to wear or where to eat or what to eat. And, you know, and it's not just, I don't want to decide. It's that I really, there's like this barrier where I can't decide. So I'd like for us to consider something as we have thought about the strangeness of our grief, how all over the map it is, and how we feel very out of control and like we're losing it. Whether it's from the oddness of when grief rises up and causes us to feel smothered or break out into sobs, whether it's a cloudy mind that we can hardly finish the next thought or remember someone's name or how to do tasks that we should know very well how to do, whether it's hard to make decisions and you feel like I cannot make another decision. I cannot make my brain work. My heart can't take anymore. When we are at that place throughout grief, I want to encourage you with a thought. The Bible says in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, in verses 1 through 4, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted, or to harvest, in other words, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. And, you know, it goes on and it mentions other opposites like that. And what King Solomon, who had asked God for wisdom and God gave it to him, but in his wisdom, he tried everything possible on the earth to give him happiness, and he could not find it. And at the end, his conclusion was that, you know, the Lord is where we get our happiness from, or our joy, our true joy is what I should say, and that everything else is vanity. One of the things he's doing in this chapter, and I should give credence to Matthew Henry's commentary on this, is he's showing the mutability of man, or the changeability of man, that our life changes. It's up, down, up, down, up, down, like the waves of the sea would be a good comparison. And that that brings me to something I want to read to you from Hebrews, because we have a God who does not change. He is immutable. He's the same today as he was yesterday, and he'll be the same tomorrow as he was today. In Hebrews, it says in chapter 6, in verse 18, that by two immutable things, two things that don't change, in which it was not possible for God to lie, we might have a strong consolation, who have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope set before us. He says it's not possible for God to lie. And then he also says, we have a strong consolation or comfort, that, and that we're going to find out in the later verses, he's saying that's Jesus Christ. But right here he's saying he's a strong comfort. He's who we run to for comfort in the midst when life makes zero sense and is hard to understand. Who have fled for refuge. That's where we go for refuge. To lay hold upon the hope set before us. We have a hope that we can hope in, even when life seems completely hopeless. Which hope we have is an anchor of the soul. He compares that hope to something we can compare to the waves crashing and you know, breaking us and taking us, smacking us down into the sand. He compares Jesus as the anchor in that. It said, and he says he's both sure and steadfast. Sure and steadfast. He is definitely going to be there, and he's going to continue to be there. And which entereth into that within the veil, whither the forerunner is for us entered, even Jesus, made an high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. This is a beautiful time between the Old Testament to the New Testament when Jesus Christ came to earth. And the job of the priest to offer blood sacrifices for the sins of the people, showing what Christ was going to do when he came as the Messiah. Now that has taken place. Jesus Christ came and he died and his blood was shed and he rose again, conquering death, hell, and the grave. And so he's saying, I am your immutable anchor. I do not change. I'm the constant. I'm the steadfast in your life. And that's where I was when I was in the throes of grief, just weeks and months after my husband passed. All I could cling to was that I knew that he was my anchor, that I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that I could trust him, that he is immutable, that he does not change. And I think so, I've given the analogy before of how that grief to me is like drowning, that it takes you under and it holds you under and you suffocate and you swallow water and you gag and you think you're not going to make it. And then you come up above the water and you spew it out and you recover and you think you're going to be okay. And then the wave comes crashing and takes you down and takes you under and holds you under again. And you go through it all again. And then you come up and you get the picture that it happens again. Just like those waves of grief come in and just hold you under and choke you and suffocate you. As sure as that's going to happen in grief, it is sure that if you know Christ is your Savior, you can claim his comfort. You can run to him in refuge. He does not lie. That Jesus Christ has gone before you and paved the way that he can claim, I can be your anchor. And what I just want to encourage you with today is hang on. Hang on to the anchor and let him take you through these deep, dark waters and show you what he has for you on the other side of this. Again, I'm not saying that grief goes away or that you ever stop dealing with it, but he is going to equip you and he's going to strengthen you and he's going to help you with his purpose and his plan for you in your life. And I want you to be able to trust him. I hope these thoughts have helped you today, and thank you for coming along this journey with me.
We appreciate you joining us today at Speak Your Grief with Sonia.
At Speak Your Grief with Sonia.
Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube as new episodes are added weekly. Thank you again for joining us as we unpack our grief. We hope you have been reminded that you are not alone in this journey.